Want to get your business in front of real sports fans? The Fade Route with D and Z reaches over 1,000 listeners every month. Are you ready to be part of the in crowd?
Yes!
Email us today. Hit us up at faderoutemail@gmail.com and find us on our socials at Fade Route Podcast. Time to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
T-minus 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coming at you from the AO Studios. It's the Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z.
Powered by Riverside FM.
Coming at you live from the AO Studio.
AO.
It's the Fade Route with D and Z. I am D, and we've got a great show for you tonight. Adam Silver still trying to figure out this Kawhi Leonard situation with the Clippers and the Raptors. Lots of players not attending the MLB All-Star Game tonight. And will we ever have another 300-game winner in professional baseball? We'll begin today's show with the World Cup semifinals. They're set and they're kind of chalky. The top four ranked teams in the world made it through and will battle it out to see who plays in the finals in New York, New Jersey on Sunday. Number three, Spain, knocked off number one, France, 2-0 this afternoon, while number four, England, and number two, Argentina, square off tomorrow. Both England and Argentina dabbled in controversy on Saturday, adding intrigue to the match. Who will make it through to face France on Sunday, and who's winning the World Cup? Kind of chalky, huh?
Kind of chalky, really chalky. So 1, 2, 3, and 4, right? Like this would be, we talked about how the USMNT is the Creighton of soccer, right? Of international soccer. This would be as if four number ones make it out of the bracket. So who's going to play Spain on Sunday? Who's going to take that through? We'll start with that first and work back. It's hard to say that Argentina does not have the advantage at this point going forward. Seemingly, all of the breaks are going their way. They have the talent already, so they don't even need a lot of the breaks that they're getting. They're just benefiting from them at the right time. And at the end of the day, you have some really, like, interesting happenings going on, right? You have, with England, you have the ball allegedly, like, hitting the camera wire, but didn't hit the camera wire because the heart of the ball said it didn't change flight, and that led to the goal being over, you know, okay, sure. You know, the heart of the ball, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. There's a new phrase in the year of our Lord 2026, the heart of the ball.
Heart of the what?
The heart of the ball. For love of the game, the heart of the ball. But, you know, Argentina benefiting from, like, the rescinding of the yellow and then went to end up with a red. The rescinding from their player and putting on to the other player. It's like, just trying to follow that on the radio. It's like, wait, who's getting kicked out of the game right now? Why? Somebody's getting kicked out of the game, and I want to know why.
Around here.
And who? Like, who are we not... Like, who are we not paying around here to be, you know, direct and tell us what the hell is going on? But you've seen Argentina survive when you thought that they were on their heels in some controversy with Egypt. But they are still the reigning defending champions. And the champions' advantage kind of stays with them until England can muster up the ability to knock them off. And England has shown heart, right? They went into Estadio Azteca and they beat Mexico. Like, that's hard. That's a hard thing to do. And they did it. So this team is battle tested. They will push Argentina. Probably more than Argentina has been pushed the entire World Cup.
Egypt, right?
Egypt, yes, they got out in front, but they didn't stay out in front, right? When you get out in front of the game, you can't just lay back on your laurels. You can't rest. And that's kind of a little bit of what happened to Egypt. Yes, there was some controversy about the foul that was 90 feet away from the goal, but there was a little bit of taking their foot off the gas pedal. Right? Push the game. Keep pushing the game. No lead is safe, especially when you have Lionel Messi out there. And if England jumps out to an early lead and then decides to park the bus, just it's going to be Argentina-Spain. So that's what's going to happen, right? You have to be aggressive. You have to stay on top of things. And you have to push them. Because if you don't push them, they're going to push you. That's just how it's going to work. As far as Spain and France goes, France never really recovered from the penalty, the Olafable goal. So they got, again, Spain got out on the front foot of it. Was it, I mean, it was a penalty. It was absolutely a penalty. Like, Lamal got kicked. Like, he got kicked. That's a fact. So, you know, Olafable scored. And then France just kind of, like, never really pushed with aggression. You know, they very conservative in attack. Nothing from Dembele, nothing from Mbappe, plenty of chances, yeah, but none of the quality chances that you needed, right? None of the quality chances that they've been hanging their hats on. Now, credit that to Spain, right? Spain's defense did kind of build a wall around.
I read somewhere that this was like the 11th straight time France has beaten Spain, something crazy
It's ridiculous. Like
Spain's beaten France.
Spain has France's number,
right?
In that regard, they make it difficult,
right?
And Unai Simón is a great keeper. They've allowed one goal in the tournament. Tournament.
Right.
Not just the game, not just the last game, the tournament. Right. So defensively, they are stout. They're definitely stout. France could not crack the code. And England might be able to. Argentina, I think, definitely. So what I'm looking for in the finals is Spain versus Argentina, which is effectively El Clasico, Barca versus Real Madrid, and just watch for that.
Well, I appreciated your little walk in chat this morning. I saw your little video you posted. Very, very lovely. Mm-hmm. Very lovely. And I just want everybody to know I took Spain in that little poll he put. So I was honest.
I didn't see your vote there.
I voted. Uh-huh. I voted. I'll work backwards. So I'll start with, you know, Spain and France. I watched the whole game. Mm-hmm. It was a good game. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just going to give Spain its flowers. I mean, they own France. That's basically it. France had a 37-game unbeaten streak snapped, which is fucking insane.
Yeah.
They hadn't lost since, I think, 2010, something stupid like that. So, no, they got beat. They got beat. They had plenty of chances. Mbappe had chances. All their good players had chances. Yes, you can say that the penalty in the beginning of the game, you know, kind of hurt them, but they didn't, it was 1-0 for a really long time, and then they were lazy on a give and go, and he put it in, you know, and it's 2-0, and they just really never got back into it. Spain's goalkeeper played an excellent game. Their defense played an excellent game. They played well moving the ball around. They had a game plan. They went in and they did it. So there's nothing to take away from there. France got beat. Go home. End of story. Now, on the other side, you know, England went into Mexico, man, and beat Mexico in the altitude and the hostile environment. They didn't get any sleep that night. I know to beat the man, you know, to be the man, you got to beat the man. But I haven't seen anything from Argentina that's made me think, wow, they're a world beater this year. They have Lionel Messi for sure. They've gotten some help. Right, they've gotten some help from the refs. They've also come back and won games, and I don't know if you can do that against good teams, like really good teams. And I think with England, I do think goals are going to be scored on both sides. So I can see it being a 3-2 game, a 2-1 game, a 2-2 game going to PKs. Like, I could totally see that happening. But I'm going to go with England just because of the road they've taken to get here. And it just seems like it's time. I mean, I think the last time they were relevant was maybe in the late 60s. So I'm going to go with them on this one. As far as the final's concerned, I think it'll be a great matchup between England and Spain. And I would probably take England. I just think it's kind of, like you said, you went into Mexico, you beat Mexico, high altitude. You've had a tough road to get here. And mm-hmm. So I could see them, you know, coming out on top. And the other thing I want to add is, you know, one of the things that's been in the news is about the World Cup expanding. And my position's changed on this a little bit because it's a world game. Okay, it's a world game. And it takes time to qualify. And I don't have a problem with expansion because at the end of the day, cream rises to the top. You're never going to see situations where you don't get, you know, the top four or the top six are going to make it to the end. I mean, that's just the way I feel. I don't think a team like Norway is going to get rolled by Bosnia. I don't see that happen, right? I don't see a team like England maybe losing in a knockout round to Cape Verde, right? And that's what you don't want to see. And that's why, like, if for American sports, I don't need to see that. I don't need the Reds making the playoffs, okay? In football, I don't need to see the Jets in the playoffs. I just don't need to see that. I don't. And also, well, don't I think in that. Those sports, also in those sports, there's – I think you can get hurt in soccer. You certainly can, but there's more chance for injury in, you know, American football, in baseball, and in basketball, and the recovery time can really change the aspect of the game.
We did see Kone break his leg on an errant challenge, so it's definitely like you're
we
definitely.
Did, but I wouldn't shoot that team down just because they lost him. Like if Lionel Messi went down this weekend, I still think that Argentina can play. Like, they still have 10 guys on their team that are pros, that are better than most teams. That's what I'm just trying to say. Like, you got 11 guys. It's not the end of the world here. I agree with Rita that we should keep it low, but I'm not opposed to the expansion as I once was, because I understand there's an argument. It's a world stage. It's every 4 years. I'm okay with other teams being invited and, you know, expanding.
I think they got it right with this format. Like, there has been the drama. There has been the intrigue in it all. We've had the surge in African nations. You've seen quality play throughout. I think that if you go to 64, well, yeah, Italy finally gets in, which is, there's that. But is that something you necessarily want to see? You know, like, Italy, they play boring defensive soccer. Is that really what we want to watch for three games? Because they're not making it out of the group stage. So, you know.
Now those days are over.
This has been super exciting, and I think it is definitely here in this format for the foreseeable future. Now, Rita also brought up a really good idea about VAR. They need to reform what VAR is. You know, it can't be something that, you know, a guy's fingernail is offside. Right, it has to be something of substance here. You can't have the fourth official buzz down on a play that happened 2 minutes ago and affect the overall outcome of the game. So the laws need to be tweaked a little bit, and the use of VAR, it's like replay in baseball, man. Like, if a play at second base happens and the cleat comes a micrometer off of the base.
That's not what this is for.
That's not what this is for. No, exactly. Like, you know,
the baseball missing the strike zone by a centimeter. Right. It's ridiculous.
A baseball missing by a tenth of an inch. You're like, nope, oh, this umpire sucks. He missed it. Tenth of an inch. You scrub. Like, what are we talking about here? Yeah. But, you know, this has certainly been, and we will do the autopsy on the World Cup after the championship, but there has been some great things. There also have been some controversial things, and it's definitely something that is imperfect, but Infantino needs to get back in the lab and try and make this an even better experience than it was. You like fishing? How about the outdoors? If you do, then Pinche Gringo is the lifestyle apparel brand for you. Built around the outdoors and not taking things too seriously, Pinche Gringo makes everyday shirts for guys and gals who live outdoors. Comfortable, wearable, and just interesting enough to get noticed. Go to pinchegringo.org, enter the promo code DNZ, and get an exclusive 15% off discount on any product. That's pinchegringo.org. Enter the promo code DNZ for an exclusive 15% off. That's pinchegringo.org.
Well, we've reached the All-Star break in Major League Baseball, and the Midsummer Classic is looking anything but. Quite a few All-Stars are carrying middling stat lines, and some of the bigger stars like Vladdy, Shohei, The Miz, and Cam Schittler have opted out. Sounds like the Pro Bowl to me. Is it time to rethink the All-Star game format in Major League Baseball?
Now, I appreciate that the young guys are getting their shot, right? You have a lot of players on this roster that are making their first All-Star appearance. So right now, Parker Messick is on, for example. So a lot of baseball fans couldn't identify Parker Messick if he was in a lineup. Right? You have a guy like Shea Langeliers of the A's. Most people can't identify him. They know who Justin Verlander is. They know who Mike Trout is. They know who Juan Soto is. They know who Kyle Schwarber is. And I think that also speaks to the issue. There are 36 first-time selections. 36. It's great that you got your due, but it's an identity crisis when you have guys like Vladdy who are just like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm okay. I'm not going to play. Otani. Did Otani even come? I don't think he did.
No, he says he had his knee drained, and he's only going to be able to DH this weekend.
All right, so just tip your cap and just, you know.
Wave
your little hat, and when do you get paid, right? So does this format need to change? Let's see. You have currently the American League is winning 3-0 at the end of the second inning. You have 9 innings and then the swing off. So basically it's the shootout from hockey or PKs. Which, you know, it's fine for an exhibition. It's not something I necessarily want to see. But I'm sure there are people out there who like it. I don't.
Right.
So we had the Home Run Derby that was sent exclusively to Netflix. Didn't watch it. Didn't watch a pitch. I am coming to the acceptance that this is not for me. And that's okay. You know, not everything is for everybody. And I think it would behoove Major League Baseball if they just named an all MLB team like they do at the end of the season, keep playing, right? Keep playing this week, keep playing straight through. You end a week earlier in October, which means you end a week earlier in November. And you get it done, right? I think that if you're going to do something, if you're hell-bent on doing something right now and giving the players a break, do skills challenges. I know I've mentioned this before, right? Yeah, home run derby, that's the tip of the iceberg, right? That's one thing you can do. That's one skill you can showcase. I love the KBO bunt derby. Like, they should do that. Put a big old fucking bullseye out on the field and bunt the goddamn ball into the bullseye. Just like curling or darts. Closer to the bullseye wins. Like, I would love that. You know, match races. Settle these things. Who's the fastest guy in Major League Baseball? Do it. You know, NHL does fastest skater every year. Why not? Do it. Double play relay. Like, something. Anything. Anything that could showcase the skill of your talent. This just isn't doing it. It's not doing it. Because you're going to see, you're going to get what? Maybe one at bat? Thanks for coming. One inning? Solid. It's not how it used to be where you had star-studded lineups and guys like wanting to play longer. We're not seeing that now. The days of Junior hitting the warehouse in Camden Yards, over. The days of a star-studded 1-9 and then a stud pitcher, thing of the past. So just name the All-MLB team, call them the All-Star team, have a skills competition if you want to, but I would be A-OK if you shit-can this and just kept the season moving.
Yeah, so I like the idea of the skills competition. Maybe, you know, who can get it from the outfield to home the fastest.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, set it up as relays. You don't have to just throw it there in a shot. You know, and targets, like the NHL does the shooting it at the net, and they have to hit all the targets.
Yeah.
They have the pitcher hit all the targets for a catcher.
Or even like horse, like home run horse. That would be cool.
Or, you know, there used to be a game, I think it was an MLB, I think it was an MVP baseball or triple play where you would hit the ball and there were targets on the field where you had to hit them and there were ramps that the ball could go up and then go in the outfield or go in the stands. There were like tractors riding across the field. I don't even remember that. But I actually watched the All-Star game. I actually watched the home run derby last night. It was okay, you know. I do like that they went back to swings instead of the time limit, which I thought was stupid. And it was fun to watch, you know, towards the end to see Schwarber have the lead and watch
his Junior lead. Caminero just got hit in the hand. Hopefully he didn't just break his hand. Good one, Rob.
So that was fun to watch. You know, it came down to the end and But as far as the game's concerned, if the players aren't going to take it seriously and the players aren't going to go, then, yeah, I say get rid of it. I mean, you have Aaron Judge, who's out because of an injury, a legitimate injury, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Shohei Ohtani decided to get his knee drained on Sunday. I mean, that's fine, but maybe you could have just showed up. Like, I'm not saying you had to play, but Sign some autographs, take some pictures, support your teammates. Like, I understand you're getting ready for this series in the Bronx, and it's a big deal. Same thing with Cam Schiller. Speculation is that he didn't want to play because he wasn't even the starter. Come on, get over yourself.
Like, Zach Wheeler, man. What about Zach Wheeler?
Well, I'm actually on Zach's team because if you look at Zach's numbers, I'm sorry, but my man is got a he's 10-1 with a 2.13 ERA. And the game is in Philadelphia. What the absolute fuck? Like, how do I not get named in this team? And granted, he pitched on Sunday, so it's not like he could even pitch in the game. But how do you not name him to the team? You know, Paul Skeens isn't pitching because a lot of the now the managers are pitching their players on Sunday or Saturday so that they can't pitch in the All-Star game.
Right?
And like, come on, guys! Like, what are we doing here? Like, I like the idea of watching Roger Clemens face Barry Bonds. You know, I like those matchups. And that was what made the All-Star game fun. Mm-hmm. Shohei, well, not anymore, but, like, getting the chance to see maybe Shohei pitch to Mike Trout again. Like, just things like things you wouldn't normally see. But if you're going to charge a premium dollar amount for the Home Run Derby and for All-Star Weekend and the exhibition game, give me some talent to watch. I mean, I'm not going to go pay for this thing. I wouldn't go to it anymore. But back in the day, I would have. Like, I remember when it was in Comerica Park many, many years ago, I wanted to go. Just because all the big names were going, and they were going, and they wanted to play. It made it so much fun and so exciting. But
I mean, think about it.
Maybe it's something you do. Maybe it's something where you play the game every 4 years. But every year there's a skills competition. Like, make it so people want to be involved and make you want to go. Like I said, I know you've got it on. I don't plan on really watching it. I'm just not interested. There's nothing.
It's on the background.
What's in it for me to watch that? Like, well, there's nobody's getting anything out of it. Nobody really cares. If Shohei was playing, I'd probably watch it. If Aaron Judge is playing, I'd probably watch it. But
right,
Paul Skeens is pitching because I don't get to see Paul Skeens. I might have turned it on or The Miz, but Juan Soto, he don't run for balls. As a Met, he ain't going to run for balls tonight.
Well, no, probably not. And I've seen Paul Skeens pitch this year. And yeah, he's all right. He's all right this year. But, you know, I'm with you on this. It's passe. It's definitely passe because of not only teams starting to kind of protect their investments, but also interleague play is kind of like diluted this. We see it, right? Back when we were kids, back in our day, like, we had to wait till the All-Star game for like Ripken and Trammell and Frank Thomas and Albert Bell and Mark McGwire. We had to wait for that, and you had to answer the question, could Greg Maddux get these guys out? Could Curt Schilling strike these guys out? And then interleague play came and we saw it. The answer was yes.
How about Pedro pitching against them?
How many people are Pedro going to hit? Yes.
Well, no, didn't he strike out the side?
He struck out the side in 99.
Was it in Boston?
In Boston, 99, yes. So he, what was it? Was it McGwire, Sosa?
It was studded.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But we don't get moments like that anymore because of a multitude of reasons. The star power is diminished. Teams are taking care of their investments and interleague play. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not an interleague play guy. I know, like, in the beginning when I was a kid, it was novel, but now it's completely outlived its usefulness, much like the All-Star game at
Yeah, so Pedro struck out Barry Larkin, Larry Walker, and Sammy Sosa.
Woof.
And then he came back in the second inning and he struck out Mark McGwire and Jeff Bagwell.
Yeah, pretty good.
Five strikeouts. All right, Pedro, you're done.
Pretty good.
What? Go ahead.
And didn't throw at anybody.
He didn't throw at anybody. No, Don Zimmer wasn't. He was there, but he...
Quantum Squares offers scientifically formulated energy bars with 100 milligrams of organic caffeine for long-lasting, stable energy. Every delicious bar provides balanced nutrition with 10 grams of plant-based protein, healthy fats, and complex carbs. Use our promo code DANDZ, and you can use that at quantumsquares.com.
It's time to do a little reflection and assessment before the second half kicks off on Thursday. Only five American League teams are over 500. The National League Central is proving to be the most competitive division, with four out of the five teams having winning records. Who's been the most surprising, good or bad, this season?
So let's start with the bad, because I think there's going to be more bad than good. The Blue Jays, riddled by injuries, last place. Right, not what you expected out of the Blue Jays this year. I didn't expect the Tigers or the Royals to be as bad as they are. And once again, yes, I understand injuries happen. And Skubal came back, and now Skubal is, you know, finally starting to round into form. But still, 44 and 52, not what you expect. 38-59. The Royals have one of the worst records in baseball. They're tied with the Angels, for Christ's sake. That's a team that should be better than it is, right? You have a team like the Mets, 17 games under 500. I'm done talking about the Mets. Like we talk about the Mets all the goddamn time, and it doesn't get clearer. It doesn't get clearer. It just makes me angry. It just makes me angrier to talk about the Mets. I'm not here to talk about the past. But even like the Padres are 48-48 with Tatis and Machado and the roster that they have. 48-48 seems a little low for them. You know, I think that they could do better, and by their own admission, they probably would admit the same thing. Pleasant surprises, the Marlins. Like we've talked about the Marlins. You've talked about the Marlins, Otto Lopez. So they are definitely making the most of their situation with the least in terms of payroll. The Phillies were like dead in the friggin' water. And then they fire Rob Thompson. All of a sudden, second place shot right up, right? So it's like the cure for what ails you. Even the Red Sox recovered. They're only two games under 500. You would have thought they'd be dead and fucking buried. Like Cora, it was a lifeless team. Cora gets fired. Boston's two games under 500. They're chasing the third wild.
They won their last 10 or 11 games, right? Something.
Yeah, they're 9-1 in their last 10. 9-1 in the last 10. Ridiculous. I mean, the White Sox. Come on. Nobody expected this from the White Sox. We didn't know if Murakami could actually play. Right? We didn't know if he was going to be a strikeout machine or if he was going to be Babe Ruth or Sadaharu Oh, as it were. Turns out, kid's pretty damn good. Pretty, pretty good. So, all in all, I gotta say, there are a few bright spots. You expect the Yankees to be good. You expect the Rays to be good. I'm not lumping them in on that. But in my opinion, this year, it's definitely been more of the bad surprise than the good surprise.
Yeah, I have mixed ones. How about the White Sox? After three straight 100 loss seasons, they're leading the AL Central, dude. Like, holy shit. Like, with what? Yeah. Murakami? Like, what?
They have young three players on their roster.
Conditions have transformed the roster much, you know, faster than expected. You know, we both, I think, have them dead to rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, how could you not be impressed with the Florida teams? I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays. Come on, Yandri Diaz. Mm-hmm. I think they have one of the best starting rotations in baseball right now. They're in first place in the American League East with the Yankees behind them. It's incredible what they've been able to do. And the Miami Marlins are competing for a playoff spot. Like, they're legit. Otto Lopez is one of the highest batting averages in the league. He's one of the best players in the league. They have a chance to make the playoffs. As far as disappointments, I mean, you could say the American League in general, right? I know I just mentioned three American League teams that are most surprising, but to have only a handful of teams that are over 500 is pretty embarrassing. The Yankees, even though that they're in second place without Aaron Judge, I mean, the team that they built and the payroll that they're paying, they should be a lot better than second place in the American League East. You know, like you said, we talk about the Mets a lot. They're in last. They're terrible.
Yeah.
Their coach got fired. I mean, you got to think they're going to be sellers. I got to imagine Lindor is going to be on the move. I mean, I can't imagine all these guys staying on this team the rest of the season just to come in last. Weaver has value. You know? The Blue Jays are coming off of a World Series where they went seven games, the LA Dodgers.
Yeah.
And they cannot hit. Their offensive regression is disgusting. Vlad Guerrero only has 5 home runs, and none of them were at home. Are you kidding me, dude?
Absurd.
It's just they're near the bottom of the American League East. I want to say they're fourth. They're in third or fourth.
They're dead fucking last.
They're last. They're last. Are you kidding me? I would say the Giants are a surprise, but I mean, come on. He can't bring a college coach who's never coached professional baseball in there. He's arguing with people who are pinch hitting, not pinch hitting. So, you know, we have that.
Elevate your protein game with Clear Whey Protein Powder. Lactose-free, sugar-free, and refreshingly delicious. Perfect for a flavorful, protein-packed boost. That's Clear with a K. Go to clearprotein.com, enter promo code DNZ for 20% off any product. That's clearprotein.com. Clear with a K.
Conversely, we've talked about team performance, but let's talk about individual performances. High-profile players like Fernando Tatis Jr., Vladdy G, Gunnar Henderson have been subpar this season, while Kyle Raleigh has cratered coming off of a superb year. So which player has been the most disappointing?
I mean, you got take your friggin' pick. Like, because you have some players like Jarren Duran, right? Yes, he's hitting 194, but he's popped 13 homers, right? So there's things that you can hang your hat on, and you can say, hey, there's something there, right? There's something there. Like, we were talking about, why is Fernando Tatis getting a pass for his power outage? Because he's hitting 277. Is that what you're paying him for? You're not paying Fernando Tatis to hit 277. You want him to have 35 homers and 100 ribbies. Like, that's what the money's for, to quote Don Draper. You're looking at a guy like all-star Adley Rutschman, 253, 8 homers, 47 ribbies.
He's an all-star, Dave.
Like, Josh Naylor, like, he's not that worse. He's not that much worse than Adley Rutschman. And yet, Adley Rutschman is here, and Josh Naylor is at home at the crib. So, yeah, Naylor's at 252 with 8 and 36. One's an all-star, and one is at home. Make that make sense. Cal Raleigh's been a fucking disappointment. Like, you can't hide the fact that Cal Raleigh has been a major disappointment. My man went toe-to-toe with Aaron Judge last year, and he completely bottomed out. But I'm gonna put one out there that it's a little controversial, but hey, going from where you were to where you are, Paul Skeens, 8-8, 357. Dude, you were like on your way, right? You were on your way to being the stud, right? You were looking at a 1.97 ERA last year. Yeah, you were 10-10, but you had a 1.97. You almost doubled your ERA.
He's not the best pitcher in the National League anymore.
No. No, he is not.
Just like that.
Like, I've seen him get touched up. I have seen Paul Skeens get touched up by the Mets this year. Like, that's all you need to know. He got touched up by the Mets. So, something is up. They're figuring out that, hey, his fastball is pretty friggin' straight. And his breaking pitches, more often than not, start his balls and end his balls. So maybe I just wait him out. Like, oh, that's great. He has so much lateral and vertical and horizontal break. They end up in the other batter's box. Let's be real here. Have a little plate discipline, for Christ's sake. And I'm going to throw this one in as an honorable mention. But again, you can kind of hang your hat on the fact that he's got 10 homers. And 51 ribbies. That's Bo Bichette. Like, that Bo Bichette's at 255. That's not great. He's been a horrible defender. Granted, he's out of position, but you're bringing him in. If you're David Stearns, you're bringing him in to be the linchpin of your offense, right? You're asking him to hit 311 like he hit last year. You're asking him to hit you're asking him to hit 298, 290, where he's been before. And it's just not there. You're asking him to provide excellent defense, or at least good defense. Just something. Do something. And he hasn't been there. But there are plenty of players around here where you could say that they're not pulling their weight.
No, they certainly are. And where to begin? I'd probably begin with Manny Machado. I mean, I know he's got the home runs, but, you know, Manny used to be, like, one of the best players in the league. He's batting 203.
Unbelievable.
46 runs, 55 RBI. 0.5 war. Yikes.
Same as Bo Bichette.
I mean, I could probably...
Who would you rather have?
Yeah. I mean, I could probably talk shit about Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, the only thing I would say is that for him, he's actually been a decent leadoff hitter. He's batting 277. Mm-hmm. I get what you're saying. Like, they're not paying him to do that, but he's actually playing very... He's playing very well, but he's not playing where he should be playing. So, I mean, I put him in that conversation. I mentioned it in our last segment. The biggest letdown to me is Vlad Guerrero. I drafted him in the first round of my baseball draft this year. I really thought he was going to have an MVP season. I figured that, like, this was going to be his year because he saw what it took to get to the World Series, and he was going to take his team to another level. And, guys, it's just not there. I mean, I'm a person that's seen him every day, and he doesn't strike out, which is nice, but he can't get on base. Like, he cannot hit the ball and get on base, and he only has 6 home runs, none of which are at home, were at home this year.
Absurd.
And it's just like, what the hell's going on? You guys are in last place. And they voted him into the All-Star game. And I'm kind of glad he didn't go because he don't deserve to go. Like, he's been struggling with some back stiffness. And he's been, you know, kind of on and off the day-to-day. But, my man, like, what is happening to you? Austin Wells is a terrible baseball player. Just an absolute catcher from the Yankees. He's atrocious. a terrible baseball player. I honestly believe that there are 5 to 10 guys in the minors that can do what he's doing. And the fact that the Yankees have not done anything about this yet is just mind-boggling. He's batting 155 with 6 home runs, 13 RBIs, and 30 hits. Just to put this in perspective, ladies and gentlemen, Giancarlo Stanton, who's been hurt for almost the entire year, has more RBIs than he does. And he's only he hasn't even played. Like, I don't know how else to say this. Like, so
I think it's also the fact that we are now looking at advanced analytics and statistics, and they're trying to find things that you can point to and say, he's actually not as bad as you think he is.
Maybe.
And I think that's the landscape in that of meeting. Baseball.
I'd be like, no, no,
I would.
He's in Giancarlo Stanton has 90 at bats, and Austin Wells has 194 at bats. I think if you gave me 194 at bats, I can get a couple hits. I think I could. Yeah. I really do. I'm going to pat myself on the back there.
Yeah, probably. I mean, both of us could probably get at least a hit. But if you're looking at, like, Austin Wells, right? What was his... He has power, as was shown this year. And he has framing ability. That's all gone with ABS. It doesn't matter if you can frame anymore. Tap the helmet. Doesn't matter. So, you become a relic of a bygone era. But then you look at the standards, right? What is good? What's considered a good baseball player, right? What's a good average? In your opinion, what is a good batting average these
good,
days?
250, 260. That's good.
You got guys hanging their hats on 230. And they're like, yeah, that's great. That's amazing. 230.
I think 230 would have 230 was good.
Now you have a guy like Schwarber. Now Schwarber is able to outkick his coverage, right? Because he was hitting the 190s, but he's hitting 30 bombs.
He's a leadoff hitter hitting bombs.
Right. You're looking at a guy like Duran. He's hitting 194. He hit 13 homers. So a lot of what's going on here is the moving goalposts of what we're looking at. Yeah, I understand getting on base is important. Right? I get that. But batting average counts too. Like, I would like to know that my hitters are actually hitting. Like, that's great. That would really be,
that's just great.
Yeah. I would like my hitters to go up there and actually try and hit the goddamn ball.
If he's a good hitter, then why isn't he hitting?
Right. And, well, that's the other thing. Emphasis on launch angle.
Got an ugly girlfriend.
No confidence. I understand. He went to the swing coach, and now he can't hit the ball. All he does is elevate. Having that over-reliance on launch angle and swing path, and it's just absurd, right? When you have Barry Bonds saying, down to it, up through it, right? That's the way we were taught, and that's the way it's been from Charlie Lau to Walt Reniac to the beginning of time in baseball. Down to the ball, up through the ball. Never in a million years have you had such weak contact or just outright strikeouts, right? How many friggin' Rafa Devers has 150 strikeouts already? No, he's at 111. He has 111 strikeouts right now. We're in July. It used to be that you were embarrassed to strike out 200 times a year. Or 100 times a year. Tony Gwynn never struck out. Well, what he struck out, what? Less than 100 times for his career.
Right.
Right. He struck out fewer times in his career than pretty much anybody. But we don't hang our hat on that anymore. We don't hang our hat on being a well-rounded hitter. And if that continues, all we're going to see is the diminishing and the dwindling of what all-stars are and what quality players are. And then you're going to get a mediocre product that's worse than what we have.
Yogi Berra played for fucking 19 years. He only struck out 400 times total.
Unbelievable. Bygone era. That doesn't exist.
His highest strikeout season was 1952, where he struck out. No, I'm sorry. His highest strikeout season was 1959, where he struck out 38 times.
38 times. And how many at bats?
38 times in 521 at bats.
Come on. Come on.
Well, 400, I'm sorry, 472 at bats.
Even better. Even better.
It's retarded.
It's a joke. So it's such a joke. It's such a joke.
Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto. We really care about what's under your hood.
Justin Verlander announced that this season will be his last. Currently, JV has 266 career wins, which leads all current pitchers, followed by Max Scherzer at 222, Garrett Cole at 156. Given the state of pitching in Major League Baseball, will we ever see a 300-game winner again? And if so, who will it be?
Looking up and down the roster of the winningest pitchers, and then also their ages, let's go down the line. We stopped at Chris Sale, right? Sonny Gray has 136. He's 36 years old. Is he getting another 150?
Having a good year.
No. Having a good year. Surprising. One of those surprising good players. Like, I'll eat crow on that. He's done well.
No hitter into the eighth against the Yankees.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, 136 wins, 36 years old. I don't think he's going to double his win total. in like 4 years. Gausman, 35. Zach Wheeler, 36. Michael Wacha, 34. Yu Darvish, 39. Quintana's 37. Corbin is 36. Like, the youngest guy is Berríos. Jose Berríos has 108 wins. He's 32. I don't see any of these guys getting on a roll here. Like, Jacob deGrom, 103 career wins, 38 years old. The structure of how pitching is treated has fundamentally destroyed the records, right? It has fundamentally destroyed this generation of ball player. Because you have guys that probably could go longer than they're being asked to. You probably have guys who could go through the batting order three times. I'm pretty sure that some of these guys could go through the batting order three times. But they're getting pulled by their managers in absurd situations. Guys like Chris Sale, guys like Verlander, bulldogs who are just going to take the ball and go nine and dare you to take the ball from them. Another bygone era, right? Even a guy like Tarek Skubal. He's 29 years old. How many wins does Tarek Skubal have for his career?
150?
59.
Solid.
And he's 29 years old. What are we doing? Sammy Alcantara has 62. He's 30. Corbin Burns.
I think the biggest issue that Major League Baseball is going to have is, you know, how are we ever going to judge what pitchers should be going to the Hall of Fame?
Because
they're clearly never going to hit the strikeout, wins, or ERA marks that some of these guys in the past have. Right?
No.
I believe Justin Verlander won an MVP. Let's say he did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How could a pitcher ever win an MVP again if he's not winning 20 games?
No.
19 games.
You need to be the organization that bucks the trend. You need to be the organization that says, we're going to run our guys out there and they're going to pitch. They're not just going to throw. I don't care what my spin rate is. I don't care what my velocity is. Does my pitcher throw strikes? Can my pitcher get outs? Can my pitcher
down?
God damn it. Keep the ball in the fucking yard. Can my pitcher keep the ball in the goddamn yard? And can my pitcher keep my bullpen rested? Because this over-reliance on the bullpen is another problem, too. You're churning and burning guys out, and what are you doing? You're just having a shuttle between the majors and AAA. And they're all the same guys. They're throwing 95-plus, straight as a string, and the good hitters will tattoo it. The bad hitters, it'll go right by. So there needs to be a fundamental change in how Major League Baseball looks at hitting and how it looks at pitching. And that's the only way we're going to get back to where we were. And I don't want to hear from the new generation about how this is the best it's ever been. No, 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 no. But yes, guys are bigger. Yes, guys are stronger. Yes, guys throw more. They throw
harder.
I feel
like you were at that game in the Bronx where it was Roger against Pedro.
I sure was.
That went all the way into the eighth or ninth inning.
That is the greatest baseball game that I've ever watched in person. Scoreless into the ninth inning. Pitcher's duel. Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez. Let's go. Have at it. Now, we went just 2 weeks ago. We went to go see Skubal and Schlittler. We thought it was going to be great. We thought it was going to be
pretty great. I enjoyed myself.
Of course you did.
I had a great time.
What was it?
You can go get him now.
You can go get him now. What was that? After Homer 5, I turned
after
you.
Riley and said, Green took him out for the second time.
Yeah. Pretty sure I turned you after that. I said, I think you can go get him.
You can
him
go
now.
Get him now.
Jesus Christ.
And Brian Yarbrough. The hell is this guy throwing?
Junk. Absolute junk. But you know what?
junk.
Absolute junk. I'm pretty sure I could hit Ryan Yarbrough. So that, but that's what it is. Like, that game encapsulated what's wrong with baseball right now. And it's going to take a team to say, fuck it, we're going to do something different.
Highly unlikely, but we'll see what happens.
Big Fork Brands brings bold bacon sausage, paleo pork jerky, and Chicago-style sauces to your table. Enjoy rich, smoky flavors made with sustainable ingredients and chef-crafted care. Enjoy an exclusive 20% discount with our promo code DNZ. Find them at BigForkBrands.com. That's 20% off using our promo code DNZ at BigForkBrands.com.
Over to the NBA as they try to stay relevant, as Adam Silver appears to be showing some backbone here. The Kawhi Leonard trade between the Clippers and the Raptors is on hold pending the results of investigation into the shady business dealings uncovered by ESPN's Pablo Torre. How will this end for the NBA?
Well,
I just don't understand why it took so long. I don't understand why it's still taking so long.
Because, as you have said, if they do something about this, then they have to out how many other teams?
Everybody. How it ends for the NBA? Lawsuit. That's how it ends for the NBA. Yeah. There are going to be 3 lawsuits filed against the NBA. And I don't know. You know, him going back to the Raptors doesn't solve this problem. The only thing I'm thinking what they're trying to do is they're trying to work out an arrangement with the Raptors and the Clippers that make the Raptors satisfied, right? That's going to make them be like, all right, we get why we lost Kawhi before. We're getting him back now. And you're giving us these draft picks. Okay, we'll shut up about it. But I think the Lakers have a gripe too, because I think the Lakers were another team that was interested in Kawhi, and they heard about this $28 million no-show that they were going to be asked to put up with, and they're like, we're the Lakers, we're not doing that. Like, it's against the rules, man. and the Raptors were the ones that brought this to the NBA. They were like, yo, this is what this guy is asking for. And then he goes to the Clippers. Why? Because they circumvented the salary cap.
They said, okay.
Yeah, and this shit happens, but you do it with the wrong way. You do it with the wrong teams, the wrong players. And this is a situation you get into. And it's really interesting how people can... I don't think I'd ever bet on the NBA again, because you can see how shady and how corrupt and how non-competitive it is. You know, when a player is going to the Los Angeles Clippers because they're going to give him, on top of his regular salary, a $28 million no-show bonus or no-show job, and it takes him to be traded for this to circumvent and start to pick up some steam. And if you notice last season, he played damn near the whole year. Why? Because he knew he was in trouble. Because you're in trouble, dude. And I'm sure this also goes all the way back to the San Antonio days. And that's probably why he got up out of there. Because they were probably like, dude, you got to go play. He's like, I'm not playing. I'm hurt. I can't play. I'm hurt. He's like, no, you're not, though.
Kawhi, I mean, at some point, Kawhi Leonard can't have 2 no-show jobs. So right. Then, you know, when he's not playing back-to-backs in the NBA, maybe he's actually showing up to work.
I'm just trying to say, like, when you... If you're saying that you're not going to go play somewhere unless you get extra treatment or extra money, it's just like, huh? What? That's what the money's for.
That's what the money's for. How is this going to end? With a whimper, not a bang. Right?
Does he get suspended?
I think he will probably get suspended. I don't know how long.
Do the Clippers get docked draft picks?
They should. They absolutely should.
Will and there not, be a
and
lawsuit?
Not second rounders. You dock them fucking first.
Will there be a lawsuit?
If these steps are not taken, so if the trade doesn't go through, if the Clippers are not thoroughly punished for what they're doing, and if Kawhi Leonard is not suitably punished for his role in this, the NBA is not going to be able to get away scot-free here, as much as they would like to.
They're like, we'll just send him to another country. That'll end this real quick. No, not exactly.
You know, it's the team that he, again, once did not want to be there. You know, he was acquired by this team. He's like, fuck, I don't want to be here. But I guess I'm back. But at the end of the day, like, this exposes the underbelly of the NBA.
You're right.
Adam Silver can't have that.
You're right. He said he didn't want to be there. He made everybody know he was only going to be there for 1 year. And that 1 year, he delivered a championship. And then he was like, all right, I need to get paid.
Yeah. And this is how you're going to do it.
And this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah. So rather than just get an endorsement deal, right? Because I get it.
Kawhi had that, though. He had an endorsement deal. He had it. And the thing about it is like, I wonder what they've threatened him with. Because, like I said, he played all year last year.
He should have to pay that money back.
He actually had one of his best years ever. Then the trade to Toronto doesn't say squat about it.
Mm-hmm.
Fires his uncle, who was his manager,
right,
and actually hires a real agent. It's almost like they gave him steps to do.
Yeah.
Like, all right, you're going to do these things or we're going to clobber you over the head.
Right. So his uncle is the fall guy here. The uncle who allegedly he, along with Kawhi, negotiated this situation.
Well, that's the whole thing is I feel like they were really crafty in Kawhi not being involved. Right.
Yeah.
It's like the uncle did all the talking. The uncle did all the dealings to kind of, you know, I'm doing this, not him.
Right.
You know,
plausible deniability.
Right.
Yeah.
Which and everybody knows that, is bullshit.
Yeah. And for that, not only should Uncle Jimmy get banned for life, you know, he could, Don Sterling can even put the whole, he's banned for life. He could do that again. But you get rid of him, you make Kawhi Leonard pay the money back with interest. Maybe we'll start talking, right? And then you write it into your bylaws. You write it into the collective bargaining agreement that you can't do this shit anymore. And the consequence for a team getting caught is forfeiting multiple first-round picks. So, death penalty. It's got to be some level of death penalty. That's the only deterrent to this. Because if there's no bite, if there's no teeth, teams are just going to keep doing it. They're just going to call it something else. They're going to find a different way.
I think they're going to keep doing it regardless. Because they can't. They can't stop now. If
right.
You're Portland, how are you getting guys there?
No. Yeah, it's true.
Have you heard the Pelicans? How is Zion Williamson still on the fucking Pelicans, my man? Come on.
If you're Memphis, now that Ja's gone, how are you going to get people to sign with your franchise?
Right.
Because at least in the past, you used to have, I have the allure of going to play with Ja. Now Ja's in Portland. So, how are you going to...
Like, how do you compete with a team like Texas who doesn't have the tax? You don't have to pay taxes in Texas.
Or Florida. Yeah. How do you do that?
New York is appealing because of the fans and because of other deals you can get here.
Right.
And maybe the post career you can sign up, a lot of guys sign up for, like the Bart Scotts of the world and shit like that. But
if you look at California will tax the shit out of you. It's an okay place to live. It's an okay place to live. So what's the cachet, right? You're losing money playing in California. You're losing money playing in certain parts of the country, right? So you definitely need to kind of figure out how to level the playing field. And if you don't, you're gonna lose some franchises here. Otherwise, you know, they're gonna have to figure out how to, I don't know if the Tampa Bay Ray model translates to the NBA. Like, I don't think you can get a bunch of try-hard guys who are overlooked by their organizations. I don't think you can do that in basketball. So they need to figure this out. They need to somehow make this more equitable. And they need to come down hard on the organizations that try to circumvent the rules.
Hypernatural, the best men's polo shirts of 2024 as voted by Men's Journal. Hypernatural offers polos, tees, and button-ups that deliver an unmatched comfort and style, featuring hypercool jade technology for natural cooling. Enjoy an exclusive discount with my promo code DANDZ, and that could be used at hypernaturalstyle.com.
It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutepodcast, or drop us a line on X at faderoutednz, and you could be next.
All right. Joining us on the In Route today is someone with a really unique career. He's an Emmy-nominated composer, producer, showrunner, and executive producer who has worked on some of the biggest animated shows on television. You probably know his work from projects like Breadwinners, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Team Up, great show, Baby Sharks, big show, and most recently, Hey Buddy and Boogie Bird. Tommy Seek is on the program. Hey, Tommy, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. This is awesome. I love to be here.
Hey, Tommy, what's going on?
Nothing much, man.
Great having you, man.
Yeah.
So before we get into your career, we want to talk about something that's more in our wheelhouse, which is youth sports. So as a father watching your son compete in both soccer and baseball, our sons were on the same baseball team last year.
Right.
What life lessons have you seen youth sports teach that you think every child can benefit from, regardless of whether they become professional athletes or not?
Well, and that's the fact, right? I mean, all of them aren't. 99%, right, are not going to make it. So
my son definitely not.
Yeah. I know. I mean, my son's five, so I'm holding out one more year. I'll hold out hope for him.
He waited for me to take a drink before he said that.
But I mean, I would say this, like, so me and my wife have two different like styles with this. Like, she's the type that when we play games around the house or whatever, like, she beats him. She doesn't give a shit. She doesn't pull any punches. Like, I can't. I don't have that. He's winning. Whenever I play with him, I let him beat me all the time. It's terrible. I don't like it. But so I love when I see him in competitive sports, he's learning that skill, how to lose gracefully, how to win gracefully too. And like, you know, especially now kids are glued to screens and it's terrible. Right. But like now that they're actually getting out there and experiencing again, like what it's like to win or even do well in a sport physically, feels like the adrenaline is different than if you're just doing well, like playing Uno or playing, you know, on your screen or whatever. So I just think like it's experiencing that the victory, you know, the victory and defeat, whether they're winning a game or losing a game, just the individual efforts that they're making and whether they're doing well or not. It's cool, man. And then obviously, so the social aspect, making friends, listening to coaches, taking direction from someone other than parents or teachers. It's like, I think it's a different type of processing that they have to do. That they're, you know, it's fun, but it's also structured. And I think that's what I noticed for Tommy. That, and I would say this, like in T-ball, they're not keeping score, or so there's no win or losing really. But in soccer, he did the first time he lost, he cried hard, and I was like,
which is good,
which is good, right? Exactly. And then it was even better was the next time he lost, he didn't, and I was like, all right, it's good. So you got that out of his system. You get to kind of see how he can, you manage those highs and lows even at that early age, of just experiencing a little bit and you know, it's got to have fun, right? They got to have fun, but it's more fun to win, but they got to have fun.
Yeah. I mean, Luke, my youngest hasn't experienced that yet as far as like winning and losing. Like he's still just playing the game.
Yeah.
Dominic this year, he's 9 going on 10. This was the first time that he actually got upset after a loss. You know, he was on a really good team this year and we lost to a really bad team and he was devastated. He was crying. And I was like, Dominic, this is important that you understand what this feeling is like because you don't want to feel this again. What are you going to do now moving forward to not feel like this? It's like, listen, we got beat. The other team beat us. There's no cheating. They beat us today.
Yep.
But we've got to use this to get better and be better tomorrow. You know, you're not always going to win every game. And so I agree with you that it's good to learn the winning and the losing aspect of it and where we go from here.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So youth sports today can be incredibly competitive. So how do you encourage your son to focus on enjoying the game, developing as a teammate, and handling both success and disappointment?
I think it comes back to, I think, experiencing it with a team and seeing that, you know, when his friend is up at bat and his friend does well, he's cheering for that instant, right? For that kid to do well. And then, you know, vice versa, when he's up, someone's cheering for them. So it's those little moments. And it's just about having fun. I mean, we all love the players that are having fun out there. Like, you know, the guys that are doing it for more than the paycheck, the guys that really have that love for what they do. So if you can, I mean, I just try to do that and just encourage that's the reason to play. And if you're not having fun, then we're not going to play. Yeah, but I hope you have fun and I want to do everything I can to make it fun. But that's really it. That's all it could be. And then if he wants to take it to the next level and decide to be a little crazy about it and, you know, that's on him. And I hope he does because it's, you know, that's fun for me, but I want to make sure that it's fun for him at, you know, as a base level.
Yeah. I try to stay hands off too. I mean, I played a lot, and I try to realize that like my career path or my path isn't his path. Like I don't know what he's gonna like. He might like basketball more than I did, or he might play football. He might hate football. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I try not to get involved. Like I don't want to coach. Even though I coached last week, my first game I ever managed by myself, 0-1. last year I had to help assistant coach Luke's team, but Luke doesn't listen. My son doesn't listen to me. He listens to the other coach. He doesn't listen to me. So I'm trying to stay out of it. I kind of just want to be a spectator, especially, you know, with the 10-year-old team. It was fun watching the teams like pop up in the infield. You know, what's going to happen? Be a triple, home run? I don't know. It's a lot of fun to watch those games. And I enjoy being a spectator after all those years of playing. And yeah, same thing. I agree with you. It's the teammates. It's rooting someone on and it's having good sportsmanship. Like, you know, recently there was a professional athlete that said, I don't want to shake another team's hands after they beat me. I was like, man, that's a piss poor attitude. Sounds like you came from Duke. Like, you know, that's not the way it works, dude. Like, you got to respect the game. You got to respect your opponent. You know, they beat you today and maybe you'll get them tomorrow. But I think it's a good idea to, kind of inject sportsmanship into the whole thing.
Kindergarten lesson, man. Yeah, to not have that as an adult is a sad thing.
That's really sad. Like, it's just poor Jason Williams just shouting out his name there. So, all right. So now let's kind of get into your bread and butter. So you worked on a wide range of animated projects from Breadwinners to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Team Up, Baby Shark's Big Show, Hey Buddy, now Boogie Birds. So how did you first break into animation, and what have been some of the biggest lessons you've learned as you've gone from composing music, which I had no idea you did, to becoming a showrunner and executive producer?
Well, definitely a weird, you hear in this industry that no one has a direct line to what they do. It's always like a weird group. And I definitely had a weird one. So I was a rock musician. That's how I started. Like my creative endeavors I toured with bands. And then a friend of mine who was in a band decided to be an animator when he was like 20, and I kept the band going. He went out to California, learned how to do that and started doing that professionally. And then we came together again back in like 2012 is when we joined forces again. And we made this pilot. I made the music for it. And I came up with this whole audio first process, kind of the old school ways of doing cartoons where you do all the audio first and then you draw to that.
Wow.
It was called Breadwinners. We put it up on YouTube and it started a bidding war. I mean, like, and this was like early days of YouTube, you know, so I remember having like 100,000 views and it felt like a zillion. Like that was like, something was going to happen. And something did, you know, it was a bidding war between like Cartoon Network, Disney and Nick, and then Nick wound up buying the show. So then I went out to, that's when I got out of New York and moved to LA with my wife, girlfriend then, but wife now. So that's how I got in. And then after that ended, you know, we did two seasons of that. Then I remember talking to my lawyer at the time, like, hey, okay, so I'm a composer. I'm kind of a producer on this show. Like, what should I do? And he's like, you should start your own show because composing is really hard. Like, to do that consistently. And I'm like, start my own show. Like, I'm barely a composer. Like, I didn't even know I could do this. And that, you want me to like make my own show? And then like, lo and behold, like I sort of got with me and Gary, my partner at the time. We made up this pitch for the TMNT team up show. Nickelodeon owned Turtles. Gary had the idea. Let's make a comedy version of it. So we did that again. They bought it. And I was an EP on that. So that got me sort of above the composing level, which opened more options. Because if it was just composing, I'd probably be out of the industry, honestly. Okay. Super competitive. I didn't go to school for music. Like, I'm definitely
self-taught?
Self-taught, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sick.
But out there, you're competing with Berkeley dudes. Like, it's hard stuff. So, anyway, but that got me into that sort of echelon. And then then we started pitching shows and stuff, all musical-based. And when Baby Shark came along, they called us and said, hey, you guys, you know, if you want to... You know, would you run this show? To me and Gary, we're like, yeah, I'm unemployed, of course.
So, right now.
Right now. Yeah, yesterday. I'm sorry.
I was funny.
That's right. So yeah, then we did that. That was great, man. We did that for 5 years. And then really the beginning of this whole AI, the way the industry has changed, was at the end of Baby Shark. So like we kind of got out and now we started to do independent stuff, feeling that was more of the future. Was really kind of taking these things into your own hands, because the powers that be, that the structure, the system as it was, is collapsing, or it's definitely in serious transition. So you can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow.
And we're being joined by Emmy nominated composer, producer, showrunner, and executive producer Tommy Sika. And you mentioned it already. You talked about how the game is changing, and as AI continues to make animation, music production, and even voice generation more accessible. Have you explored using AI in any part of your creative process? And where do you see it enhancing creativity? And where do you believe a show's heart still has to come from a human?
It's a great question. And it's a hot topic. Everyone I work with it's polarizing. And really, I think if you're a professional in the industry, and even you see like the college kids, like the commencement speeches, they're booing the people giving the speeches about it. It's very anti-AI feeling for me, for the people, for my friends, for the people that I work with. It's a hard line where you don't want to come near it. You don't want it near you or near your kids or near your work. Obviously damaging to careers, but also, I mean, if you see, and I know it's sliding scale of like, you know, some of it's really good, some of it's really shitty, but like in general, it is not good to let that into your brain and to let that into your kid's brain. It's just, it's heartless and it's soulless. And it's kind of like, it's like a Trojan horse or something. It's like, it's just with it comes just this degradation of what we are creatively as a people. It sounds silly, but that is how it feels. And the more you see it, the more, I guess, in our advantage, we feel like our stuff's going to stand out more because there is a difference. There's a difference between the human-made stuff and the AI stuff. And eventually, it'll saturate the market. AI will be everywhere, and then it'll be the pockets of people who want human stuff. You know, it'll balance out, and then maybe it bounces, swings back the other way at some point. But it's here. It's not going anywhere, and it's making a lot of problems. And I don't really see the advantage.
Is that where you see it going? You see it going into a section where there's going to be people that are just going to want human drawn or human created content, and there's going to be the kind of a new age people that are like, well, I can use AI to generate, you know, this perfect instrument. Is that where you see it going?
Wow. 100%, man. People that can't do will use it and have great, and some of them will have great results of it. But yeah, there's no stopping the amount of stuff that's going to be produced with it. It's going to be crazy.
It's interesting because I feel like, you know, I was talking to my wife about this actually earlier today. And I was saying, you know, there's a difference between a person who's talented, who can write emails and draw up business plans and make campaigns. There's a difference between that person and the person who just knows how to prompt AI and knows how to talk to it in a certain language that's going to get something on the level or something slightly above the level of a person who's worked for 25 years in the business.
I don't doubt it.
And the whole thing is like, there's a difference, right? Right? Because the person who's worked 25 years in the business has the acumen, understands what he's doing, understands what he's producing, and it's, you know, it's been proven. Where the person who's writing a dialogue, essentially, just writing a script, mm-hmm. is like, writes it up, gets it here, there's no understanding of it, right? It's just, this is what it told me to do, or this is what I've used this system to create, so it's gotta be good, right?
Yeah right? Good enough, right? Good enough.
If it's not, you tweak it to get where you think it should be, but at the end of the day, you think it's right, mm-hmm. because the computer said it's right. Where the guy who's been around for 25 years, he's seen every kind of campaign and every kind of business move, is, you know, he's got the knowledge. Mm-hmm. There's difference. There's a big difference there.
Yeah. Agreed.
I'm in the education sphere, you know, and I was actually just, I was talking with your sister about this. So it's just, shout out, Christina, what's up? And we were talking about this, about the influx of AI and how, like, people are always going to want to go to TPT. They're always going to want teachers to pay teachers because a human did that. They actually, you know, put some creativity into it, put some style into it. And there was some thought behind it. Like, you know, my fiance is also a teacher. We're talking about, like, the use of AI, the goods and the bads. And it's an aggregator at the end of the day. Like, it's going to give you something soulless, and you have to supply the soul anyway. So if you're going to go back and do double the work, you might as well just do it all from scratch to begin with.
Yeah,
but, right. Because it's not giving you a final product, right? It's giving you, it's just, you know, something that needs to be reviewed. It's something that needs to be tweaked. It's something that is not, you know, completely final.
And, you know, I also respect the idea, but, you know, it's going to be great for a lot of things. I just don't, for certain things, it gets dicey. But yeah, I want a cure in every disease that we have. That would be great.
That would be wonderful. That would absolutely be wonderful. So you've worn a lot of different hats throughout your career, composer, producer, showrunner, creator. So for someone listening who dreams of working in animation or in some sort of entertainment sphere, what skills or mindset have been the most important to your success? And what advice would you give to someone trying to break into the industry today?
I would say that the mindset is that, you know, you might be good at whatever it is, whatever skill you got, but there's a lot to learn, and you just start doing whatever you can for whoever you can. And this business is 2000% who you know. And obviously, if you know enough to pursue this business, or you have some sort of skill and whatever it is, with production or whatever it is, but you got to get out there. You got to make connections. You got to take whatever position you can get you in, that you can now meet 10 people that introduce you to 20 more. It's a networking business. So there's no getting around it. Like, I thought that I came back from LA to here being like, I did enough. I mean, I should be able, the job should find me now that I'm in New York. I've done enough out there, but not being there is a difference maker. So, you know, it's important to remember that and respect that it's a real part of this industry is the networking aspect. And then the other thing I would say is, me and my creative partner Gary, we complete each other's skill set. So, like, you have to know what you can't do, and if you can't do it, find someone who can. If you know, and then build a team based on your filling your gaps, because everyone has them. These things all take, it's like sports, man. These projects take so many people at high levels to create a product that everyone's proud of.
100%. We're also really big on the concept of, like, mentorship and on our show. And we're always big into that. Would you say that you've had somebody in the industry who you could call a mentor, who you could say that has helped you and kind of, like, you know, framed your reference, or, like, somehow, like, put you on the right path?
I would say there are a lot of people I call for advice. I think when I came in, I didn't know what I was doing. I was a rock guy entering this new world. I had a big identity crisis. I don't know who I was anymore. So Gary really helped me. I mean, he was the pro. So I thankfully, I guess I got to, you know, be best friends with my mentor. I guess I would say he was the one that really showed me the ropes. But then, like, I've had bosses throughout the years, Rich Magianis and Dana Clavarius, people that I just trust, that I'll call and I'll ask, and, you know, ask questions about what they may think. But, you know, I think that is something about this industry. I'd say people are always willing to help, because they know how tricky it is and how not straightforward anything is. And so, yeah, I would say Gary and then a lot of supporting mentors as well.
Awesome. So we'll get you out of here on this one. You've worked on children's animation, you know, while also creating adult comedy series like Hey Buddy, which has already surpassed 10 million views. So how different is the creative process when you're making content for completely different audiences? And does working on one type of project make you better at the other?
I'd say it's great to be able to flex both those muscles, to be able to make... Yeah, I mean, I have a five-year-old, so there is nothing better than making your five-year-old laugh or sing or whatever. That's the greatest reaction that you can ask for. So I love that for that reason. And then the adult stuff is like, you want to make your friends laugh. Who doesn't? It's, you know, you want to be accepted by your peers. And I would say that they're similar, very similar in that whether you're a five-year-old or a 35-year-old these days, attention economy, you better hook them in 4 seconds, no matter what it is. If it's a kid learning a lesson, he better know what that lesson is quickly, or at least be hooked by a song or something. And on the comedy side, adult side, so writing wise, I think they help each other because it's the same sort of process you have to go through. And that is the idea of how do you hook somebody quickly? How do you get them engaged all the way through? Because you know how it is with these metrics, right? You need to that curve got to be sort of leveled out. And you want them watching to the end. So I think in that way, they're pretty similar, actually.
100%. Like, you have a lot of overlapping skills there. And it's one of those things that, you know, and I'm looking at it even through the lens of social media. You still have, like, chefs on Instagram. He's like, I just want to cook for a living. Like, that's what I signed up for. I signed up to make food. I didn't sign up to be a movie maker.
Like, right. That's right.
We're all kind of learning this on the fly, man.
Yes, you're exactly right, man. Everybody is. And anyone who says they're not is lying. It's true.
It's a brave new world after making this shit up as we go along. Let's be real here.
So, speaking of which, by the way, never nominated for an Emmy. This guy, not nominated for an Emmy.
What?
Speaking of that, too. No, on my team, one of my team members is an Emmy. So, as a team, we're Emmy nominated. But personally, never Emmy nominated. Unfortunately, not yet.
No, hey,
but I think
team win.
You can take the team credit.
I'll take team credit. Sure.
We're not editing that out. We don't have the budget for that. Congratulations. Just gave you an Emmy.
Thank you very much. I'll hang it right by my guitars.
Update your Wikipedia. There we go. Oh, man. But Jack of all trades, composer, producer, showrunner, executive producer for Hey Buddy, Boogie Birds, Tommy Sika, thank you for coming on, brother. And if you want to be a member of the In Crowd, hit us up, faderoutmail@gmail.com. Slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutpodcast, or drop us a line on X at faderoutdnz, and you can join us on the In Route. Tommy Sika, thank you for coming on, and plug away. Where can we find Boogie Birds? Where can we find Hey Buddy?
Thanks, guys. Boogie Birds is on YouTube. Boogie Birds, two words, BOOGIEBRIDS. And on Instagram and TikTok at Boogie Birds Official. And then Hey Buddy is Instagram, TikTok at Hey Buddy Series.
Make sure you go watch. Tell them D&Z sent you. Get those views up, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, boys.
Step outside of your safe area and make a statement without saying much with FCK Clout Lifestyle Apparel. Embrace the colorful chaos and stay emotionally regulated in their graphic tees, hoodies, snapbacks, accessories, and more. Go to fckclout.com today and check out current season and past season merchandise for men and women. Get it while you can. That's fckclout.com. Check them out today. fckclout.com. Who's the best of the worst this week in sports? The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award.
All right, boys and girls, you know what time it is. It's time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. You know how it goes. We put up a poll on our Instagram account at Fade Route Podcast, and you vote. And you vote, and you vote, and you vote. And the winner of said vote gets a shout out in this year's show and takes home the coveted ass trophy. And do you know who took home the coveted ass trophy last week, D?
I don't.
The U.S. men's national team in a unanimous.
I believe I had that one.
Yeah. in a unanimous selection. Yeah. That was a low bar after that performance. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Legend Superstar of the Week, D?
All right, so first up, I've got Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher and DH Shohei Ohtani, voted into the All-Star game and choosing not to show to rest his knee, which he claims he had drained on Sunday. He will be available to DH against the New York Yankees in New York this weekend. Shohei Ohtani, you are my Legend Superstar of the Week. Number two, I have the starting pitcher of the New York Yankees, Cam Schittler, who chose not to go to the All-Star game to prepare for a series against the Dodgers this weekend. That sounds familiar. I have a feeling this was related to Cam not being selected as a starter. Dylan Cease started for the American League this evening. Cam Schittler, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And last but not least, Major League Baseball. Yes, you, Rob. I know Zach Wheeler pitched on Sunday, but he should have been voted into the All-Star game. He's 10-1 with a 2.13 ERA. He's a Philly. The game's being played in Philadelphia. Once Major League Baseball caught wind that he was upset, that's when they decided to call him and ask him if he wanted to play, which he replied, fuck off. That is just garbage. Major League Baseball, you are my alleged superstar of the week. What do you got, Z?
I'd feel pretty disrespected too if I was Zach Wheeler. That's pretty damn bad. That is really, really bad. I'm going to start with Geno Smith. Jets quarterback Geno Smith. Cited for the third time in 3 months for speeding. After the police closed the investigation into the allegations that Geno Smith battered his girlfriend. So it's been a rough couple months. It's been a rough reunion so far for Mr. Geno Smith in Florham Park. Geno Smith, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, Tyler Herro, getting into a physical altercation with former teammate Bam Adebayo.
He got punched in the face. Wait, Tyler Hero's the alleged superstar? Or is Bam Adebayo the alleged superstar?
Tyler Herro. So Tyler Herro's acting kind of like a little bitch. He's definitely acting like a little bitch.
He got punched right in the face.
Yeah. Well, what did he do that caused that reaction? Because he doesn't have the best reputation around the league, right? They've been asking about him, what are your opinions on Tyler Herro? It's like and one guy said, fake punk-ass tough guy. So, an unnamed NBA player. End quote. He's a fake tough-ass, he's a fake tough guy punk-ass bitch, I believe is what they called him. So, yeah, he wants to move on from the altercation with him and Bam last week in Las Vegas. And if I got punched in the face, I'd want to move on from that quickly as possible too. Now, it's a homecoming. He's from Wisconsin. He's going to Milwaukee, and it already is not starting well for Mr. Herro. Tyler Herro, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And number three, the notorious Conor McGregor.
Oh yes, that was
blowing
bad.
Out your knee. First round main event, 18 seconds in, I believe.
No, is it that short?
It was short. It was barely in the first round. Max Holloway never even got a chance to touch him. Conor McGregor said, Holloway will not lay a glove on me. He was right. He popped his knee as in the approach. So, allegedly, the dry ice caused condensation on the mat, which caused the slip, which caused his knee to pop. Other video shows him practicing flying head kicks in warm-ups prior to the walkout, and a little gingerly, a little ginger landing, followed by him looking down at his knee, made, the conspiracy theories start to fly. Like, was it gone then? And did he just try and make it into the octagon so he could collect his payday? Because good luck trying to go out there if you're Dana White or even Joe Rogan and say, hey, guys, Conor McGregor just blew out his knee in warm-ups. So main event's canceled. See you later.
Thank you and good night.
Tip your parking. We'll see you next time. Good luck.
Here's the deal, though. Like, if you paid to watch him, you deserve to get your money taken from you. Like, when was the last time he fought an actual good fight? When was the last time he was actually relevant? He's like the king of gab. Like, I wouldn't watch anything he did. I can't even remember when was the last time he actually won something. When was the last time he won a fight?
I mean, he's 22-7 on his career, so he's definitely.
He's on the backside
of that career. But, you know, those losses have amassed in recent years. But when he was on, when he was mowing through guys like Jose Aldo, and when he was, you know, when he was the terror of the division, he was must see. Then the Mayweather McGregor fight.
You're talking like what, 2019, 2017?
2017. Like right around the peak of McGregor mania was when he fought Floyd Mayweather in the original Jake Paul-esque fight. Like, we're going to put on a show, and then at the end of the day, like, I'm going to take care of business here. So the Conor McGregor scenario needs to be studied. How a guy can just fall and fall and fall and get back up again and fall again and just still, regardless of how many times you fall and how many times you get back up, just trying to cling to relevance when you're kind of just a name at this point. You need to realize it. Joe Rogan needs to realize it. Dana White needs to realize it. You're at this point what Chuck Liddell used to be, Tito Ortiz was, Randy Couture was at the end of their career. They're just a name to pop a card. Conor McGregor, you are my alleged superstar of the week. I think we said our piece. Go to our Instagram poll at Fade Drop Podcast and vote. And vote and vote and vote. And for our nominees.
You're better than that. Just do better. Just do better.
This has been The Fade Route with DNZ. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to your podcast. So until next time, stay fade, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.